With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. My name is Mark Daly. I'm your host, and it is, well, it is only just Thursday, October 22nd for just another hour or so. The week and the day and the month, indeed, and the year, in fact, are ebbing away quickly. And honestly, 2020 can disappear and go away as quickly as possible. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that has that thought. It's been quite a horrible year so far. Anyways, we're not here to complain about 2020. Well, I guess we could, but we are here to talk about Formula One. This weekend, the Portuguese Grand Prix at Portimão, the first Portuguese Grand Prix in a good number of years. So really looking forward to that. And as I sit here in the studio in the dying hours of October 22nd, we are now just under 7 hours away from FP1 at Portimão. So never get tired of saying that whenever I come into the studio on a Thursday night to do the weekly show. And like I say, I'm really looking forward to this Grand Prix this weekend. I say that every time that there's a race. I think that's just sort of default setting, but I'm sure all of you can identify with that as well. Anyways, a good number of things to talk about this week on the show. And it's been an interesting week from a point of view of Formula One news. We're really going to cover a really broad amount of several topics here as we go through the news list this evening. And we're going to go everywhere from driver changes to Ferrari and COVID and all sorts of weird things going on in Formula One. But that is the times. Of course, COVID is an issue everywhere, of course, as it has been for a good long period of time already. And Formula One has certainly not been immune to that. But before we get into that, one of the big issues or the big stories of the week is that Kevin Magnussen and Romain Grosjean have been confirmed that they will not be returning to Haas F1 for 2021. And that ends some speculation. Over the past couple of weeks, what Gene Haas and Gunther Steiner were going to do. And I don't think this really comes as any big surprise, does it really? I mean, we were talking about it over the past couple of weeks here and there on the show as, some of the race seats have kind of solidified and the plans have been made known. And you have guys like Nico Hülkenberg and Sergio Perez looking for drives in 2021. And, and I don't think it's a bad move on the part of Haas to part way with those guys. That team, like I said, needs a bit of a brush of fresh air in it. I mean, I don't think it's fair to lay all of their woes and problems at the feet of Rogro and K-Mag, but it is what it is. And they did say that it was for financial reasons. But anyways, Jan Magnussen, the father of Kevin, Jan also was in Formula One a good number of years ago. He said that he's advising his son to investigate opportunities in IndyCar, World Endurance, and also to look for whatever Formula One opportunities there are for 2022. So Kevin said he is interested about maybe a possible switch over to IndyCar, and he's not really keen on taking a sabbatical away from motor racing for next year, the year after, whatever it might be, until he gets a chance again, if that chance comes again in Formula One. So I mean, Jan, I mean, he's a guy like he raced in single seaters, raced in Formula One, and then he after his opportunity had disappeared, he went over to racing in sports cars. He was with Corvette Racing from 2004 to 2019. He earned two IMSA GT titles and four GT class Le Mans 24 hour wins. So I mean. it isn't the end of the line, obviously, for especially young drivers or maybe even older drivers, too, if you've got that desire to race and you're willing to look elsewhere. Anyways, Jan was asked what he would what sort of advice he would give to his son to, you know, where he should follow and what he should do in terms of his career from here. And he said, he quote, he doesn't have to let go of the single seaters for next season. He's not going to be with Haas anymore, but I don't think he's ready to give up yet on the F1 dream. It is unlikely he'll have a race seat for next year, but there's also 2022, which should be an exciting year in F1 with the new rules. I don't know if there are opportunities for that year, but Kevin needs to make sure if there is or isn't, so nothing slips through his fingers. I'm advising Kevin to really figure out what he wants, what's most important, and then go for that. He's been very vocal that he wants to win races, but also it has to be in something meaningful. So I do believe that he needs to go for the best opportunities he can find in either IndyCar or in the WEC. And then he needs to make up his mind on what he wants the most and go all in on that, end quote. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's a good fatherly advice. I mean, it's the one thing's to be winning races, but if it is perhaps something that's maybe a little bit beneath him, that's maybe not as challenging, that's something completely different. But it sounds like there are plenty of opportunities. And Kevin says that he is interested, like I was saying just now, with a potential switch to IndyCar for next year. And, well, I mean, he's been there for a couple of years. He's been there since 2017, replaced Esteban Gutierrez. And, well, I mean, he's just been there a little while longer than his teammate Roman Grosjean, who's been with the team ever since they joined Formula One several years ago. And anyways, Kevin was asked about a possible move elsewhere. He said, quote, IndyCar is something that I've always been interested in, always. My dad was an IndyCar driver back in the 90s, and I've been to IndyCar races with him as a small child, and I just always thought it was super cool, and I would love to have a go at that at some time. But at the moment, I think even outside F1, the whole motorsport world is hit hard by these times that we have this year, and it doesn't look easy to get good deals over there. So we will see. I'm not saying no to it at all, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but it looks slightly difficult, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have to be obviously quite flexible, and he's going to have to keep his eyes and ears open and be willing to take new opportunities. I mean, times are tough for everybody at the moment. I mean, we are in a global economic downturn and a global pandemic, so it's just it's a difficult time for everyone. But it will be interesting to see where he turns up if he gets a drive, you know, maybe an IndyCar or an endurance cars somewhere else next year, and whether or not he makes it back into Formula One at some point in the future. Anyway, so the reason that Haas was giving for the decision to drop both Grosjean and Magnussen was they were being dropped for financial reasons. And, well, that's kind of an interesting one, you know, for it to kind of be put out there. Like I said, I don't think it would have been a big surprise for Haas to part ways with either one or both of these guys, just as a pure sporting decision. Like I said, I mean, this team needs something. They need to do something to re-energize themselves. I mean, of course, they got Ferrari engines, which aren't the greatest either, and they've kind of haven't really kind of lived up to expectations. They've kind of stumbled a little bit in Formula One. I mean, they've done a very good job, don't get me wrong, to come into Formula One. They've been in now, what, 5 years now since 2016? I mean, it's a difficult thing to come into Formula One as a constructor like they are and be competitive right off the bat. But, I mean, they showed some flourishes here and there, and last year that started to tail off a little bit. This year, yeah, it's been a bit of a continuation you know, from last year, even though Grosjean did score some points at the Eiffel Grand Prix the other weekend. But still, it's a bit disappointing to see that that they are stumbling a bit, like I said. Anyway, so Grosjean did admit that he has no real plans, nothing concrete for next year, but he is looking outside of Formula One for opportunities, and he said that both endurance cars and also Formula E are options, and that there are some possibilities there. He was talking maybe about Peugeot and their hypercar project. You know, for 2022. So he's definitely looks like he's got some more irons in the fire, at least, you know, he's saying so publicly compared to maybe his teammate Magnussen. Anyways, he was asked about it, and he had to say, quote, "I knew probably one of us would be out at the end of the year just because of the situation around the world and how COVID has made it very hard financially for a lot of companies around the world. So I knew one of us would go out, and that's why I said to Gunther on the call when he called me that I was expecting one of us, and he said, no, for financial reasons, I need both of you out. So fair enough, I fully understand. I know it's been a tough year with COVID in a lot of industries or companies that suffer from it. The team is going on a different path, and I wish them luck and the best for the future," end quote. So Grosjean did, talk about some different options that he's looking at. He just, one of the things he said was, quote, "I've had some partners in my career follow me through different teams, but I've never been a pay driver as such, and I don't want to become one. It's just the way that it is," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, it's got to be a little bit disappointing for those guys, but you see it right from you hear it right from the lips of Romain Grosjean himself that it seemed obvious that one or both of these guys were going to be out at the end of the season. Honestly, I'm surprised that it was both of them. I would have thought maybe perhaps Magnussen might stick around. The thing is, Grosjean, yeah, I don't know. I just find him, well, let's just say the incidents that he's had that didn't put him in the best light have been a little bit more spectacular than other drivers. But I guess it's neither here nor there. Maybe six of one, half dozen of the other when it comes to both of those drivers. And of course, if they're looking at restructuring things on a financial side within the team for what they need to do for the rest of 2020 and then going into 2021 and then the new formula in 2022, then there are obviously things to be considered. So it's going to be very interesting now with two seats opening up at Haas. Who might get a look there? I mean, one of the names that was put out there was Sergio Perez, and that might nicely open the door for Checo to go to Haas F1. And I see a lot of possibilities there. I mean, Sergio is obviously Mexican. There's obviously a big Mexican population, Latin American population in the United States. Sergio brings a lot of sponsorship money with him, and I think that that there's obviously a possibility. Abilities there. I mean, I think that he's a marketable driver. I think that that people in the United States, obviously in Mexico, can identify with him. And I think that the job that he's done at Force India / Racing Point over the past number of years, I think he's done. I think he's a very good team guy. I mean, even though he brings a lot of sponsorship money, I wouldn't say he's a pay driver by any stretch of the mean. I mean, he's just very financially well funded. He's got good connections. And, the stuff that you hear from, the people at Racing Point, I mean, they've got nothing but good things to say about him. I mean, he's the guy that really triggered the whole thing a couple of years ago, forcing, no pun intended, Force India into administration. And that, with a bit of the financing, some of it out of his own personal resources to kind of pay some of the bills or the paychecks or something. But he basically set everything in motion to let Lawrence Stroll and his group come in and take over the team and kind of get Vijay Mallya out of the picture. And there was no doubt that once the Stroll money came rolling in, that that team definitely started to perform better in the latter half of that season than they did in the beginning of the year when the funding, that tap was slowly getting turned off. And Sergio had a lot to do with that. But I mean, he's just been a good team guy right from the very beginning. And I think that Haas might be a very, very good fit for him. So that's certainly one that we're going to have to keep an eye on over the next weeks and months and see if there's an announcement there. But it is interesting. I mean, Haas apparently decided to drop both of these guys, Magnussen and Grosjean, a couple of weeks ago. And, I don't really find that a bit surprising either. I think that they've had some idea for quite a while that what they want to do and what they need to do. And some of the names that that also been thrown out there are Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin, who are both candidates for both of those seats. And of course, like I'm saying, Sergio Perez, and I keep thinking about Nico Hülkenberg. But I guess when it comes to those guys, I guess it depends a little bit on the amount of money that they want. I mean, if they're saying that they're dropping Grosjean and Magnussen, guys that have been around Formula One for a little while. I can imagine that obviously they're not getting Lewis Hamilton type money or Sebastian Vettel or Max Verstappen type money. I'm sure that they're doing very, very well, and that notwithstanding. But if you have guys like Mazepin or Schumacher, obviously young guys, rookies, in Formula Two, then there's going to be quite a bit of a difference in the pay scale there. But it would be interesting, guy like Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, he came in on spur of the moment to fill in for Lance Stroll at the Eiffel Grand Prix, filled in for Checo Perez at the Grand Prix that we saw at Silverstone in the summer when Perez was out after he tested positive for COVID. But it is something we're just going to have to keep an eye on. Gunther had to say, quote, "I think we wanted to be fair to them. We could have kept it for us for a while and then just do it. But I think the guys were good with us in the last years. We said we're not going that way. We're going to do some changes. And therefore, we want to tell them that they've got a chance to find something else. If we tell them only whenever we decide who's going to drive the car, it could be at the end of the year and they would have a lesser chance of finding something for next year. I would say we made a decision in about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I called them last week," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, Gunther, he does go on to say that it was a difficult decision. He did admit that they've had ups and downs with the relationship that they've had with both of these drivers over the past 4 or 5 years. But at the end of the day, he just basically said when it comes down to it, he has to look after the team. I mean, he's the team principal, obviously, so he needs to make the decisions that are in the best interest of the team. So certainly, like I say, it is one to really keep an eye on over the next weeks and months ahead and see who fills in those two seats. Okay, so it's time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network, and I just want to talk to you guys about MyBookie, because between the NFL, college ball, and Major League Baseball playoffs, there's no shortage of games to watch, and with thousands of lines available on all your favorite sports and events, you can turn your game day into payday with MyBookie. If you're the type of person who likes to back the big favorites, consider putting a couple in a parlay for the much bigger payout. Not only do parlays make meaningless games exciting, but more importantly, they give you a chance to turn ordinary bets into a real moneymaker. And don't forget the underdogs. They have a ton of value. The thing about the NFL is that underdogs are never really dogs on a Sunday. Every team truly has a chance to win, and you do too. So game spreads, championship futures, and player prop bets, it's never too late to get in on the action and start turning your sports knowledge into actual cash in your wallet. So sign up at MyBookie, and when you do, use my promo code OVERTIME to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus that's designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's my promo code OVERTIME for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. Stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, all the major sports, and more. Sign up today to begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. All right, well, welcome back to the show, and we were talking a little bit just now, sort of tangentially at any rate, about Racing Point. We were talking about Sergio Perez, who will be leaving that team at the end of the year. Anyways, Racing Point, they're going to receive a warning from the FAA about Lance Stroll after he tested positive following the Eiffel Grand Prix. If you remember, he got sick following the Russian Grand Prix. Then he was really sick just before the Eiffel Grand Prix at the Nürburgring a couple of weeks ago. He was tested at the time. The test did come back negative at the time. But subsequently, since the Nürburgring, he did test positive for COVID-19, and they've actually ruled that the team has failed to comply with the COVID-19 code of conduct protocols that was put in place before the start of the season by not reporting the Lance Stroll's test immediately. So that is really surprising. So there was a couple of warnings that were handed out earlier this year. Charles Leclerc got one after he went back to Monaco between the two races. we had at the Red Bull Ring in Austria, and then Sebastian Vettel got a warning as well because he was mixing with people outside the team bubble when he was talking with Helmut Marko and Christian Horner in the Spielberg paddock, and you can understand why. I mean, Formula One is a small community, but they have these bubbles for a reason. So Stroll was tested on Sunday, the same day of the Eiffel Grand Prix, and he went back to his home in Switzerland by a private jet, and then the next morning, the next day, he received a positive test result. So apparently, the FIA did not find out about the test positive result until this week, so a week after, and this was also just before Stroll confirmed on social media that he had tested positive and is now subsequently tested negative again. So that was a real surprise. Hadn't expected to hear that at all. Anyways, the code of conduct that they put in place really is pretty crystal clear. So anyways, and it says, and I quote directly, our COVID-19 delegate will also receive updates from the stakeholder if during the covered event or within 14 days at the end of a covered event, any circumstances arise, such a disclosure by approved test provider relating to you or your reports made by you to the applicable stakeholder that indicate you may no longer be fit to attend the covered events, end quote. So, obviously, that was within the 14 days, and if it's taken them, over a week to report that, and I guess they have to do contact tracing and all those other things as well, that is a significant amount of time if people were in close contact with Lance and needed to self-isolate or watch signs of illness for themselves. So I was quite surprised when I saw that, because honestly, I hadn't been following this story at all ever since, because I thought it was a good story at the time. Obviously, not Lance being sick that he had to withdraw from the race, but I thought that the story of that Grand Prix at the time was Nico Hülkenberg coming in, qualifies last, but finishes what? He finished eighth or ninth or whatever. I mean, I thought it was a fantastic result for Nico Hülkenberg. So I kind of took it the story from that perspective, from that twist, that it was a feel good story that you get the guy that was left without a seat in Formula One after the end of last year when the musical chairs stopped and Nico was still standing. And he's come in and deputized a couple of times this year. Obviously, the first time in Britain, he wasn't even able to start, which was a disappointment. But it was a real shock, to be quite honest. Racing Point team principal Otmar Szafnauer said, quote, I think it's a good idea that the FIA has now said 24 hours from entering the paddock, you do another test, so we will do that, end quote. But it is a little bit surprising that notwithstanding that they got got caught by that. Anyways, Szafnauer did also say that Stroll's diagnosis that he didn't have coronavirus symptoms at the Grand Prix itself was made over the phone when he was talking to his personal doctor. And he'd been, he had an upset stomach before the Nürburgring race, and he'd actually been, really sick on the Saturday on qualifying. He wasn't able actually to get in the car, and had to withdraw at that point. So at that point, the Stroll and Racing Point were actually satisfied he wasn't suffering from COVID, because he wasn't really exhibiting all the other symptoms that we've all kind of come to expect, like the fever, the coughing, the shortness of breath or difficulty breathing and all that. So he didn't actually take a test until he returned back to Switzerland, to where he lives. And then that's when they found out he actually had tested positive. So it's been quite a controversy, ever since. It's kind of, shown some of the holes in some of the protocols that they've put down between, Formula One and the FIA. Szafnauer had to say, quote, he had an upset stomach and he's had it consistently. And one thing that Lance did is he called his doctor. So what should I do, right? So instead of listening to Otmar, he called his doctor. I'm not a physician. He's Lance, a private physician in Switzerland. It was a phone call, and it was the same guy Lance saw after Russia. So, you know, he got his stomach upset after Russia. We test him a couple of times. Lance went and saw the doctor in Switzerland, so called him. Hindsight is a wonderful thing, but let's not forget he tested pre-event negative. He tested twice post-Russia negative. The symptoms were there post-Russia. Now that he had a test on Sunday, it came back positive. Yes, you could look in hindsight, but you've got to remember at the time, with the information we had, it was unnecessary. It didn't even come into my mind, go do a test, end quote. So, well, yeah, you know, it's, I guess, like you said, hindsight is 20/20, but, you know, I guess in this day and age, if somebody's really sick, that, you know, that if he's actually sick enough that he can't get in the car and drive for qualifying or for the race, he actually has to withdraw. I mean, how many times have we seen that happen, you know, in normal times? I mean, it doesn't usually happen. It's a rare event. So let's just put it that way. But I guess, as Otmar says, you know, they did test him twice after Russia. He tested positive, you know, before the race. So I don't know. I mean, how many times you have to test somebody before you're ultimately, satisfied or not satisfied that that he does or does not have COVID-19. I guess I would think the thing that must have kind of set the alarm bells ringing is the fact that he was there at the Nürburgring and then decided to go home and takes a private jet back to Switzerland and then tests there. So I guess, there is that, that opportunity that he could have spread the virus to other people. So I guess it does highlight some issues that they have with the testing protocols in Formula One. Anyways, talking about Nico Hülkenberg, and we've spoken about him quite a little bit the show so far. Apparently, he is on call, on standby, whatever you want to name it, for the Portuguese Grand Prix this weekend, just in case Lance Stroll does not pass another COVID test. So, he currently has tested negative, but I guess they're being extra cautious and not leaving anything to chance now. He's been in self-isolation at his home in Switzerland since he returned, but he did have a test negative earlier this week, and he's really hopeful that he can get back in the car for the Portuguese Grand Prix at Portimão this weekend. So anyways, Nico Hülkenberg is in Portugal, and Otmar Szafnauer had to say, quote, "Yes, Nico was here. And I think other teams have opted to bring reserve drivers for the first time. I think it just makes sense to have reserve drivers." He did go on to say about Lance Stroll, quote, "He had a negative test coming into this weekend. The probability of getting now a positive is low. Is it zero? I don't know much about it, but it's low, Nico's here as a precaution. I'm confident Lance will be able to be in the car this weekend," end quote. So there you go. I think it makes a lot of sense to have a reserve driver on hand like Nico Hülkenberg or for any of the other teams. I mean, we've seen, despite the fact that they have this Formula One has this COVID protocol in place and they have these team bubbles and all that, that they haven't been completely immune. We saw it with Perez, we saw it with Stroll, we've seen it Mercedes with some of the people there testing positive. I mean, the big difference is now compared to back in March at the Australian Grand Prix when COVID was a big unknown is that medical professionals and they just know a lot more about how this virus works and what they need to do and how they can isolate and keep people apart. So it's... I mean, obviously it's awkward. Obviously it's a difficult thing to have to work through and to kind of live through, but they've developed a system that works. And I think by and large, it's been a weird season just to be because of that. I mean, we didn't start until July, but I got to give them props for getting it up and running, and it hasn't been perfect. And they said so right from the very beginning that that they'd have to deal with any of the unexpected things that would come up inevitably along the way. But I mean, you look at it now, we've got 2/3 of the season behind us. We're down to what, half a dozen races left in the year before it's sadly done in just under 2 months from now. It's kind of been fast and furious. I mean, we've had a lot of races, week in, week out. We've had a number of triple headers. and that we usually don't get in a normal year. I mean, at most, we'll get back-to-back weekends. I mean, was it 2018 that we had a triple header? What was it, Germany, France, and England, or something like that? I think it was all the three races that we had about that time at Brands Hatch, Hockenheim, and I think the French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard. I don't remember off the top of my head. So, I mean, it has been a really hectic pace, and I think they've done well to adjust on the fly that they've had. And it just seemed inevitable at some point that things like this were bound to come up, that they were bound to happen. And I think it just makes sense to have reserve drivers on hand, regardless of your racing point or anyone else. Anyways, talking now about the Portuguese Grand Prix, that because of the increase in COVID restrictions, the attendance at the race this weekend has have to be reduced. So they had actually been targeting crowds up to about 50,000 people each day of the race weekend, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But there's been a new round of restrictions that were announced in Portugal last week. And so they basically had to cap the number of spectators per day to 27,500. And I thought it was kind of weird at the Nürburgring a couple of weeks ago that you did see quite a number of people at the track. I mean, all very nicely socially distanced and all that. And I guess it looked weird to me because I've told this story almost ad nauseum on the show. Now, I mean, when I went to the Nürburgring, was at the height of Schumacher mania, 20 years ago. And I mean, it's almost cringeworthy now. I mean, considering the COVID environment that we live in, to think that, 20 years ago at the European Grand Prix that I was in attendance for, that you were all sitting there shoulder to shoulder. I mean, well, it was the middle of summer. And I mean, but there was obviously more than 100,000 people there that day. It may have been 125. I can't remember. I mean, it's such a long time ago now, but it just kind of looked funny to see people there all kind of like neatly spaced out with a couple of meters or 6 feet between them all. I mean, kudos for them to do so. But, you look at the, well, I guess it depends too on the facilities. I mean, if you are able to get that many people into the facility and still manage to, to enforce the public health measures and have people, maintain physical distancing and all that, I think that's a good thing. But I mean, they're really taking a big, swath of attendance out, reducing it from 50 down to 27,500. That was approved by the local government there. So anyways, we'll talk more about the race in the a little bit later in the show here, but it's just time now to take another break here on the Overtime Media Network while I catch my breath, get a drink of water. And while I do that, please don't go away. I'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
While sports can bring us so much joy, it can also bring us a lot of unwanted stress. And that stress can make it difficult to concentrate, relax, and get decent sleep. Sunday Scaries was launched in 2017 by two best friends and business partners, Bo Schmidt and Mike Sill. They operated a full-service bar with 50 employees and were always exhausted. They tried all kinds of products, but they didn't work. Then they started experimenting with CBD. They loved the effects and regained control of their days and nights, but they wanted better CBD products. So what they did for themselves was specially formulate CBD gummies with vitamins D3 and B12 that were super consumable, easy to take on the go, and effective. Long story short, their specially formulated CBD products and vitamins helped relieve the overwhelming angst they felt on a daily basis. So in July 2017, they named the company Sunday Scaries and began sharing their products with friends and launched their online store at sundayscaries.com. With tens of thousands of customers, monthly subscribers, and a 100% money-back guarantee, Sunday Scaries has always been on a mission to transform a worrisome nation into a chill one. And right now, we have a bonus for you. Get 25% off all products at sundayscaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME. Again, 25% off all products at sundayscaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME.
This is not the London I grew up in. It's time to take back our city. This granny's joining the resistance. Are you? Play Watchdogs Legion. Available October 29th. Rated M for mature.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. So time to move away from COVID, time to talk about other things rather than coronavirus tests and all that. Toto Wolff, team principal at Mercedes, believes that Formula One is not doing enough promoting hybrid engines outside of the series. And he says it's a good showcase, or Formula One is a good showcase for hybrid technology, but they're not telling the story of their power units well enough. And I think that's very interesting. Anyways, the quote that Toto made was as follows, quote, "I believe we're not telling the hybrid story well enough. With 50% thermal efficiency and the complexity and technology that exists in these cars with the energy recovery and the kinetic energy or exhaust gases, the batteries that we're using and the technology within them, we are a pretty good showcase for hybrid technology. The next generation of power units, whenever they come, will lend even more to sustainable energy recovery and sustainable propulsion systems in the future. We know that we have to look at the costs. We don't want to make the same mistake that we are purely engineering driven, like we with these power units, but make sure that they are also something innovative, sustainable, powerful, fuel efficient, and at a reasonable price," end quote. So yeah, I think that is really interesting because, I think that's a one quote, that one sort of keyword or phrase, if you want to call it that, is that Formula One always has to be road relevant. And I guess whatever technology that comes out of Formula One or any kind of motor racing that filters down into my car and your car, I'm sure it's very watered down, very simplified to what they get on the track. But still, I think it's an interesting thing, and I think that there's a lot that Toto's hitting on there that I think is very interesting, and I think he is onto something there, because you really don't hear enough about what they're doing in Formula One. I mean, that's a real with the whole thing about sustainable technology and climate change and all these things that we hear about nowadays, when we have these fantastic complex marvels. I mean, let's just call it for call them for what they are. I mean, they are just completely brilliant pieces of engineering. I mean, like he says, they are very expensive, but there are some very, very good things that they're doing. And you would think that that might be something that they could do more to promote, because rightly or wrongly, I think that Formula One has always had this, what do you want to call it? Kind of an atmosphere, or excess is almost decadent, and a lot of that is when they're racing in Monte Carlo and places like that. I mean, there's people are going to make a lot of conclusions about it. So I mean, it's obvious that conclusion is naturally going to get made. I mean, that is only a little part about Formula One. And, you know, if people want to talk about stuff like that, I mean, that's fine. But on the other side, I mean, they should look at other things, too. And I think that, like Toto says, that they're not telling the story about the hybrid or the hybrid story, as he calls it. They're not telling it well enough. And I think that's very good. And, you know, maybe that it hasn't been looked into enough, because maybe outside of the sports that just enough people or not enough people have not been interested or really, you know, brought to attention on that matter. Anyways, moving along, sticking with Mercedes. So there's no plan to have a complete rebrand of the Mercedes team into AMG. And this kind of follows in the wake of something that came out a couple of weeks ago, that when Daimler CEO Ola Källenius revealed that there were going to be a real strengthening of ties between the AMG brand and the Mercedes Formula One team. And it was part of it was just a smaller part of a company-wide emphasis that they were putting on the subdivisions that they have within the Daimler Corporation. So a number of manufacturers have decided to rebrand their F1 teams. I mean, you look at Renault, they're going to be Alpine next year. But anyways, Toto Wolff said that there are no plans at Mercedes to have a complete rebrand despite the strengthening of ties with AMG. Anyways, Toto had to say, quote, "It lies in the DNA of Mercedes to race. The first ever Mercedes was a race car, and we build road cars and we build race cars. But the new strategy going forward to give the sub-brands a larger marketing platform, AMG, EQ, Maybach, and I think it's good that each of these brands gets a specific patch. AMG is our high-performance brand. Formula One cars are high-performance cars." The Mercedes name is not going to be dropped from Formula One. On the contrary, it's always going to be a Mercedes. The chassis is always going to be a Mercedes. The team name is always going to be Mercedes, and we are all Mercedes people. But in addition to that, we are also AMG. We represent AMG as a high-performance brand, and we want to increase the visibility of AMG, which exists today. Here's a technology transfer between the companies. Just give it a more marketing exposure and showcase the technology transfer that happens between AMG and the Mercedes Formula One team," end quote. So there you go. Anyways, moving over from Mercedes to Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel, four-time world champion, arguably the guy at Ferrari until last year when he was quite frankly upstaged to a certain degree by Charles Leclerc, says he wants to end his time with Ferrari at the end of the season with dignity. And of course, Vettel just only has half a dozen races left with the Scuderia before he leaves to join Aston Martin for next year. Anyway, so he had a couple of things to say that I thought was very interesting. He said that, he's very, you know, very flattering and was really lavishing some praise on Charles Leclerc for what he said was doing a very good job, and said that he recognized that Charles really is able to get the maximum out of the car. And he did also to go on and also acknowledge that that he has had struggles throughout the season. And anyways, he said, specifically, "For my side, I think it's a very different year, very different circumstances going in. I'm probably not having the smoothest year doing with what I can do and not the easiest situation. But I'm willing to give everything I can to try and improve and towards the end of the year get back to know where I know I can be," end quote. So, yeah, that's obvious. I mean, it's been difficult. I mean, look at Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he's had some good years with Ferrari last year. Well, obviously not quite so much, but I mean, I think there were more things going on there. And I mean, his legacy at Ferrari is going to be mixed. I mean, there's no doubt that when things were going good there, that they were going very good. I mean, if you go, you don't even have to go back that long ago. I mean, just as recent as 2018, when, I mean, he was legitimately challenging Lewis Hamilton for the championship. I mean, that really fell apart in the second half of that season. But still, he did well through 2017 and 2018. That really was the year. And, you know, well, hindsight, I suppose, like I was saying earlier, is 2020. But that really was the opportunity that Ferrari had to win a championship, either drivers or constructors championship. 2018 was going to be it, because last year, you know, there was those accusations of something funny going on within the power unit that dogged them for a long time. And this year, following the investigation and whatever the findings were, and then the secret deal that they have with the FIA. I mean, these engines aren't the same. And you look, regardless if Charles is able to do something with that car, I mean, he's just really fighting it as well. I mean, you could put Charles Leclerc out there in a washing machine with four wheels, and he'd still be able to put in some impressive lap times with it. I mean, he's just one of these guys that is just so naturally talented that he's able to extract every ounce of performance out of these cars, be it a good car or a bad car. And we've seen them do that with Ferrari, and also his time with Sauber Alfa Romeo in his rookie season a couple of years ago. Anyways, Vettel did go on to talk a little bit more about his pending departure from Ferrari at the end of the year. And he said a couple of things I thought were interesting. And it starts here by Seb saying, quote, "Obviously, this year's car is not as easy to drive for both of us. I'm sitting in all the meetings that Charles is participating in as well. And we share the opinion. For sure, it's not always easy. But I think it's going clear into the season, you knowing you're going to part ways, it's going to be a different sort of love story. Nevertheless, I respect all the work that has been going on my side in the last years. Therefore, I'm willing to give my maximum back. It's not been the easiest years with where we are. The race as well, here and there, didn't really go our way. Sometimes like this and myself, I have to push through and pull through, and I look forward to the new tracks we have on one hand and the races that we have coming up to try and put things together a little bit more." End quote. So, yeah, I mean, it obviously has been very difficult for him. A couple other things. I mean, it was kind of a lengthy interview. He said that it was an enormous privilege to drive for Ferrari, and he wants to he wants to end up his time at Maranello with dignity. But he's very much looking forward to closing that story off at the end of this year and move over to Aston Martin for next year. I mean, that Aston Martin story, I think, is going to be very, very interesting to watch next year, to see what they're doing, not just on the track, but off the track. I mean, Lawrence Stroll and, he's putting some serious money into this, this operation, and also into the road car company. And I mean, they're not just doing it just so they can show up at Formula One, just simply Formula One races, just to be there. I think they really want to do something with it. I mean, getting a driver like Sebastian Vettel, who's obviously had a couple of tough years, but I mean, he's a four-time world champion. And I think that he's just one of these guys he's come to a real crossroads in his career. I mean, he's early 30s. He's obviously got some time left in front of him, but obviously it's been a couple of difficult years at Ferrari. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not he can really kickstart his career at Aston Martin next year. But anyways, I think at least by signing him, it gets them some credibility. It maybe gives them I would say respect they're going to earn by what they do during the races on the track, what kind of car they're able to build and put out there, and ultimately whether or not it's going to be a challenger. But if they do anything similar to what they did with the Racing Point RP20 this year, then who knows? It really could be a surprise. Anyways, sticking with Ferrari, they have decided they are going to put some more aero upgrades on the SF1000 at the Portuguese Grand Prix this year. And it's basically the completion of their development program on the car. And it's it hasn't been a good one. Let's put it that one. Let's just take a look at what they had to say here with Enrico Cardile, who's the Ferrari's head of performance development. He had to say, quote, we already introducing a few small modifications to the car aero package in Sochi and added others at the Nürburgring. In Portimao, we will have a further update, mainly to the diffuser, completing the program set out over the past few months, end quote. So some of the updates that they had on the car were, well, they did do something positive. Because Charles Leclerc, he qualified fourth in Germany and finished seventh. And then that was just on the heels of a sixth place that he had at Sochi just a couple of weeks before. And this kind of, well, we talked about this last week because Mattia Binotto, team principal at Ferrari, said that the updates that they put on in recent weeks were not really expecting to give them a huge gain in performance. But you know, the gains that they were seeing were actually an indication that team is actually moving in the right direction with the car. So, anyways, Cardile does hope that Ferrari is going to get more confirmation at the race this weekend that the development that they've had in the latest batch of upgrades is also on the right track. And this is, you know, after they've had some issues, you know, in the wind tunnel. Anyways, so yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, Charles definitely has had some decent results, but Ferrari, they're not always going to be satisfied with the sixth and seventh, but who knows, maybe slowly but surely they're starting to turn it around. But it really looks like, you know, they hit rock bottom at some point during the season here. And whatever happens, it can only there's only one way to go, and that's up. Anyways, just sticking with Ferrari, they've decided to use some of their tokens to redo the rear of the car for 2021. And Simeone Resta, who is the Ferrari's head of chassis engineering, had to say, quote, "We will redo the rear of the car. We think that this area will allow for some more room for development between the chassis and aerodynamics for 2021. Furthermore, the rear of the car will be affected by regulatory changes that the FIA are introducing to reduce the aerodynamic load in order to limit the stress on the tires. As a result of these floor changes, all teams will lose a number of points of downforce, and it will be essential to work to recover as much as possible. All this makes us believe that the most important area in which to spend development tokens is the rear," end quote. So there you go. Obviously, Ferrari is, you know, looking at that. And, well, they did restructure things at Maranello, and perhaps maybe we're starting to see some of the fruits of those labors to reorganize and put people like Cardile and DiResta, and also the redefined role that Mattia Binotto has. You know, maybe they're having their own little renaissance. So we'll have to keep watching over the next half dozen races and, of course, into next year. Anyways, time for one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
While sports can bring us so much joy, it can also bring us a lot of unwanted stress. And that stress can make it difficult to concentrate, relax, and get decent sleep. Sunday Scaries was launched in 2017 by two best friends and business partners, Beau Schmidt and Mike Sill. They operated a full-service bar with 50 employees and were always exhausted. They tried all kinds of products, but they didn't work. Then they started experimenting with CBD. They loved the effects and regained control of their days and nights, but they wanted better CBD products. So what they did for themselves was specially formulate CBD gummies with vitamins D3 and B12 that were super consumable, easy to take on the go, and effective. Long story short, their specially formulated CBD products and vitamins helped relieve the overwhelming angst they felt on a daily basis. So in July 2017, they named the company Sunday Scaries and began sharing their products with friends and launched their online store at sundayscaries.com. With tens of thousands of customers, monthly subscribers, and a 100% money-back guarantee, Sunday Scaries has always been on a mission to transform a worrisome nation into a chill one. And right now, we have a bonus for you. Get 25% off all products at sundayscaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME. Again, 25% off all products at sundayscaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME.
This is not the London I grew up in. It's time to take back our city. This granny's joining the resistance. Are you? Play Watch Dogs Legion. Available October 29th. Rated M for mature.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Just a couple more things to cover before we wrap this one up. And Cyril Abiteboul, team principal at Renault, says that Danny Ricciardo, who will be leaving for McLaren at the end of the year, is or has been the key to the progress that Renault has seen over this year. And, well, I mean, he's had some very good races or results over the last number of races. I mean, he finally got Renault's first podium at the Nürburgring a couple of weeks ago. And this was their first podium in 5 years, so it's been a long time coming. Anyways, Abiteboul had to say, quote, "It's equally important to the team, to Daniel, to myself. Also, we've been questioned about this decision of him joining us, and also his decision of joining the team. So in both directions, really. I think it was very important for everyone to put the commentators at bay and show why it made sense at the time. Yes, it was disappointing last year, and you could argue it was 1 year too early. But you know, there are not many opportunities to have a driver like Daniel who was available on the market, so I still believe it was the right thing to do at the time. The team wouldn't be what it would be today without Daniel, despite maybe thanks also to the year that we had together last year, which was indeed a very painful year, which has pushed all of us, probably starting with myself, to take the measures that we've taken, and also with the team in Enstone and with Marcin Budkowski and so on and so forth. So now we are finding ourselves in a much better position for this year and next year, and Daniel is capable of doing this type of thing. I think it's a statement," end quote. So yeah, it's interesting that Abiteboul has kind of come out and made all these statements about Ricciardo. I mean, obviously giving credit where credit is due, but there must be a bit of sadness and probably a little bit of regret in his voice as well. If you were to hear the speak with him directly, that just knowing that that even though they've accomplished so much with Ricciardo over the past year or two, that it's not going to last too much longer because Ricciardo is leaving at the end of the year to go to McLaren. So that's going to be another situation to really watch next year. How Ricciardo does with his new team compared to where Renault go from here, when they're going to be Alpine next year, of course. But still, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, it's going to be a lateral move for Ricciardo. Is it going to be a backwards move, or is he going to do better with McLaren, who have certainly been improving in leaps and bounds over the past couple of years themselves? Anyways, sticking with Renault, Abiteboul also had to say that Ricciardo's teammate Esteban Ocon, the young Frenchman, his 2020 season, although it's been a bit disappointing, Abiteboul said that it's not a disaster. So take that for what it is. Anyways, he had to say specifically, quote, "I think he needs to do what he's been doing since a few races that unfortunately he has not really materialized, but for reasons that were not in his direct control. It's still not totally clear what happened with the brake warming issue in Mugello. We still don't know. But let's be clear, Monza was difficult. It's been a bit of a reset for Esteban. The way that we are all working together, there's been lots of discussion, lots of hard work from his engineer, Mark Slade, who's not new to race engineering, in order to bring him through the steps. I still think he needs basically to be very pragmatic about this situation, which is not a disaster," end quote. And Esteban himself said he's pleased with the support he's received from his future teammate, Fernando Alonso, with his support in the simulator. And he believes that it can really help the team and their push to move up the grid and become more of a challenger. Anyways, Formula One, the drivers are actually gotten together and they're pushing for a change to the penalty points system. And this is, I think this is a lot to do with the issue that we saw with the double penalty that Lewis Hamilton was given at the Russian Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago, for these practice starts that he did in the wrong area of the track, and then that really knocked him out of contention to win that race. So, anyways, it's kind of. It's I guess this kind of gets into the fine print of Formula One, if you want to call it that. So he's into 10 points within a 12-month period. So that means he's within the 2 points of the 12-point limit that automatically puts them into a race ban for one race. So anyways, after the race in Russia, the stewards actually changed the decision because they felt that Mercedes had misinformed Hamilton that he could actually do his practice starts beyond the pit exit, and he wasn't completely to blame. So the penalty points that he was going to be given in Russia were withdrawn. And anyways, it's they've had a bit of a debate and a discussion about that, and it's been it was a real topic of a conversation at the drivers' briefing at the Eifel Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. Danny Kvyat, the AlphaTauri driver, had to say, quote, "I raised this question in the drivers' meeting about the driving points, how sometimes they give them to someone and then they retire those points. I think that this thing needs to be a bit reviewed. If you get penalty points if you cause, let's say, a dangerous collision with someone or a really dangerous maneuver, then it's clearly someone's fault, then okay, it's justified. But blue flag infringements, like all that sort of BS, I don't think you really need any license points. It's not a taxi park, you know. We need to be able to always to be able to push on the limit, so it just needs, I think, to be slightly reviewed at the system." So a lot of his other fellow drivers agree with that, and that was a real controversy, a real thing after Lewis was given those two 5-second penalties, and because he hadn't stopped already, that time couldn't be added on at the end of the race. So when he came into his first pit stop, he had to serve that two back-to-back 5-second time penalties. And it sure looks funny, too, just on a bit of a side note, that whenever you see a Formula One car just sitting there, not moving within the pits, within those couple of seconds, it really does feel like an eternity. So I have no idea. I can't imagine what it must be like for a driver. Anyways, just before we wrap up the show here, just there's not really a lot to talk about for the Portuguese Grand Prix this week, because we don't really know a lot about Portimão, especially from a Formula One point of view. But what we do know is that it's going to be the first Formula One race in Formula One, or sorry, in Portugal since 1996. It's been quite a long time since we've seen a race there. The first time we saw Portuguese Grand Prix was from 1951 at the Boa Vista circuit, and they alternated back and forth with Monsanto. And that was from 1951 to 1960. And then they went to Estoril, which they raced at from 1984 to 1996. In 1994, there was a redevelopment, a redesign of the circuit. And we haven't been back since. So Portimão is one of these tracks that kind of came on in that kind of exciting part of the summer or the late spring when the schedule for this year was reconfirmed. I mean, honestly, it was one of the only bright spots that we've had in this year, at least from a Formula One point of view, was that after we had so many cancellations and postponements and stuff like that, was there was all these speculations. Oh, maybe this track is going to come, and maybe this one will as well. But anyways, it's cool to see. I mean, the track itself, or just going back to the, we'll talk about the racetrack itself in a moment. But the last race in 1996, the pole position was set by, and this was at Estoril, it wasn't a Portimão because construction wasn't completed there until 2008. Anyways, at the last Portuguese Grand Prix, pole position was claimed by Damon Hill, who was racing a Williams Renault. He set a time of 1 minute 20.3. The podium was Jacques Villeneuve for Williams, Damon Hill. And P3 was Michael Schumacher. And the Ferrari fastest lap of the race was set by Jacques Villeneuve. He set a 1:22.87. So there you go. Anyways, like I was saying, the track itself at Portimão, it's going to be a 4.65 or a 2.89 mile long circuit. Sorry, 4.65 kilometers and 15 turns. And well, obviously, like I was saying, it's the first time we've seen Formula One there. But it's not a stranger to top level events. You get seen MotoGP race there. I mean, A1 Grand Prix race there before they folded. What was it, 10, 12 years ago? Superbikes, FIA GT Championship, Le Mans Series. You know, so I mean, there's a lot that goes on there. So it's going to be really cool to see how it stacks up, how it compares. I mean, it looks like a wonderful circuit, and really hoping that it's going to deliver a good race. So like I was saying, it was actually finished construction back in October of 2008, and so they've been racing there ever since. So Anyways, that is it. That's all the time that we have for the show this week. And well, thank you very much for downloading and listening. I'll be back on Sunday night after the Grand Prix to wrap it up and talk about it as we usually do around here. And until then, have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves. If you're up here, can you believe it? Here on the south coast of BC, we've got snow forecast for tomorrow. We hardly get snow where I live, so to get it in October, if it actually should come to pass, is going to be something a little bit strange. So we never see snow this early around here. Anyways, enough of that. Have a great weekend, guys. Take care of yourselves. Be back in a couple days to talk to you again, and talk to you then. Bye for now. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.
This is not the London I grew up in. It's time to take back our city. This granny's joining the resistance. Are you? Play Watch Dogs Legion. Available October 29th. Rated M for mature.